The Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Ladies, are you there?
I am here.
All right. Well, we're on air. No, we can't hear you, Black Rose.
Good evening, everyone. This is Mind, Body, and Spirit radio show. Tonight we're going to discuss the phenomenal woman and five signs of a narcissistic relationship. This is Wednesday, March 21st, 2018. We're glad that you're joining us. Please join the conversation tonight as we continue to uplift phenomenal women, raising our frequencies, lifting our vibrations, speaking our truths, and healing our hearts with the Mind, Body, and Spirit radio show. Our conversations will be centered around spirit talk, world affairs, lifestyle enhancements, and more. Tune in to hear the African Spirit segment. Mind, Body, and Spirit responds to your letters about life, your spiritual journey, health, relationships, dating, career questions, love, sex, etc. in the Ask Mind, Body, segment. Mind, Body, Spirit segment. Send your letters to mindbodyspiritradioshow@gmail.com for hot news topics and more. You can log on to blacktalkradionetwork.com to hear the show or call in to speak at 704-802-5056. Our show starts at 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, and goes on to 11 o'clock. Join the enriching dialogue with Black Rose and Feather Light on the Mind, Body, and Spirit show. You can follow us on Twitter at MBS Spirit Radio. That's MBSPIRITRADIO. Join us on btrcommunity.com and then join the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show group page to interact with Black Rose, Featherlight, and listeners from around the world. So we have a quote that we would like to start with. We always like to do quotes. And my quote is, "We do not see the war being waged against us because we don't want to and because we are afraid. We are engaging in behavior specifically designed to block out any awareness of the war, our true reality." Close quote, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. There's a war that's being waged against us, and we don't want to recognize it because many of us are afraid to. So we're engaging in the behavior that is set for us by the Matrix. Our hot topics tonight are the Austin bombings, which Featherlight, Black Rose will go through with you. We're going to talk also about signs of the narcissistic behavior and also psychotic behavior. You may not be aware that you are in a relationship with these types of people. And when we say relationship, it doesn't necessarily just mean a romantic relationship. If you work for someone, you work at a company, corporation, you're in politics, whatever, you are in a relationship with your manager, you are in a relationship with your family, you are in a relationship with your friends. So you may be in a relationship with someone who is showing narcissistic behavior, which can be very damaging to your psychic, to your spiritual development, to your finances, to the relationships that you have, and it can totally, totally affect you in a very negative way. So we want to go over some of those with you in addition to our hot topics.
Hey,
are you there, Black Rose?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Hey, all right. You know, I think there's something going on with my headphones. I'm going to get Scotty because Scotty recommended these headphones, and this is my second pair that is inoperable, malfunctioning. This is the second pair. I know Scotty stepped away from the studio, so he can't hear me, but yeah, that was the problem. The Black Rose is on the line, and I am in your care. Featherlight, so thank you so much. How are you? Namaste.
Namaste, namaste. I am just great. I am wonderful. I am finding out what it means to be an older person, a senior.
Oh, if you are taking advantage of those senior benefits.
I really, really am. You know, you can tell when you're older. I hate to say old because
yeah,
I really don't
older.
Feel old. I feel older, and I'm growing older gracefully. But you can tell when you're older when people who are in their 40s mm-hmm. address you with ma'am.
Oh my God! Yeah. Let me say this. I knew I was getting older when people started addressing me as ma'am and miss. I have a lot of people call me miss, and I'm like, what? I remember when I was in Detroit, and I told you about this up in Detroit.
Yeah.
The younger guys, they call the older women auntie. And so when that guy said, "Oh, how you doing, auntie?" or "Excuse me, auntie," or something like that, I was like, "Auntie, yo, auntie, auntie." Anyway, yeah, but like you were saying, and when people start addressing you with ma'am and all of that, and so you feel, you know that you're older, not owed, right? Heather, did I lose you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I put myself on mute because I heard some outside noise. But, oh, yes, I was coming out of a store, and this lady was cursing. She had to be in her mid-40s. And she was cursing pretty badly. And then I walked in the store, and then she looked at me. She said, "Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry." I'm like, oh, okay. All right.
I'm fine.
Okay, okay. And then one day I was getting out of my car, and I saw this young man with his pants, like, way, way, way too low. I mean, just way too low. So I got out of the car, and I approached him, and I said, I looked at him, and I said, "Son," and, you know, I had that look, "Son."
"Son."
I said, "Now, you know that is just too low."
Mm-hmm.
And he quickly pulled up his pants, and he said, "Yes, ma'am. Yes,
mm-hmm.
ma'am." And he pulled up his pants, and every time he saw me, he lived in the neighborhood, he saw me approaching, and it was like he said, "Oh, Lord, there goes that old lady." And then he starts to pull up his pants.
There she goes.
I'm like, okay.
There go auntie. Look, I'm auntie telling me to pull up my pants.
Yeah.
But you know, when you do approach some of these young men, and when you approach them in the right way,
mm-hmm.
not coming to them in a demeaning way, but just coming to them in a caring way, they respect that.
Yeah,
I've encountered them respecting me more so than any disrespect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
They've always been receptive.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't gotten any, you know, bad reaction because, like you say, I approach in, you know, in a loving way.
With love.
I like mm-hmm. that's my grandson. Like, baby. Come on.
I mean, I've even gone as far as to have to say on some occasions, you know, when people see you with your pants down like that, they may assume that you have, you know, some disabilities or mental issues or things like that. And I know you don't have any mental issues. It's just a style, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I understand it, but, you know, that's just what some people may assume.
Right.
So I let them know, you know, people think you don't know how to put your clothes on, you don't know how to purchase the right size, you don't know how to dress yourself. There's something wrong, because there's clearly something going on with you that you feel like you have to have your pants down to your knees and you walking and trying to hold them up. That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I'll share my quote.
Okay.
My quote for tonight is, "Painful endings are often new beginnings." Painful endings are often new beginnings.
That is so true.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we may be going through something or just experience something, we feel like it's so heartbreaking, and it is heartbreaking at the moment.
But
that's only that's only a setback for a setup. It's a setback for a setup, and it's not really even a setback. We think it's a setback at that moment,
mm-hmm.
but it's really all just a setup. As they say, when one door closes, another one opens. So thank you
true.
For sharing that Frances Cresswell thing quote, because this week was her birthday. I believe it was January. her birthday was March the 18th. Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Frances Cresswell Singh, author of the ISIS paper, her intensive study on race and white supremacy. And her father, was either her father or her grandfather, I think it was her grandfather, he was a race, what they call a race man. So he wrote and discussed race.
Okay.
So, honor to Dr. Frances Cresswell Singh. We lost her. Yes. I mean, when I was introduced to her, I mean, that was like a boo. That was like a whole another world that opened up for me. Being introduced to her and reading the ISIS paper, and I highly recommend that book when you want to really understand what's going on, why people do this. And I remember I had a friend, and I would always tell her, because she always asked me, why they do this? Why? Listen, I'm not going to keep explaining this to you. You need to read this book, the ISIS paper, so that you can have some clarity. And then you won't even be worrying yourself about why they do this and why this happened and all this.
Right.
You will understand. Because, like she said, until you understand white supremacy, I think it was either her or Dr. Neely Fuller, until you understand white supremacy, everything else will confuse you. And it will, it'll confuse you. You I don't understand why they don't like us. Nah, 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 nah. It got nothing to do with nobody liking nobody.
No. No.
You know, and we don't hate anybody. So it has nothing to do with anything like that. So
nothing at all. When I read that book, it was like I stepped from this world into another world, and everything just kind of opened up like a flower, and I thought, you know, that makes a hell of a lot of sense. It makes a hell of a lot of sense. Now I see. Now I see.
Yeah. So tonight we are honoring some more phenomenal women. So stay tuned to hear about our phenomenal women after our hot topics. And we're also discussing narcissists and sociopaths and those relationships. And I like how you explain that. It's not just an intimate relationship. This could be a relationship with a friend, co-worker, period, anyone like that. Anyone that you are relating with, anyone you're interfacing with, shall I say.
Yes, on a regular basis. Yes, indeed. A relationship is a relationship.
Absolutely. Let's get into some hot topics. So, as we know, here in Texas, we've been under attack with this the bombings taking place in Austin. And on the way home today, well, this afternoon, I think that's when I had the news feed come through about the young man was captured, the Austin bomber. He terrorized the Austin, pretty much the past, 3 weeks? I think the first bombing was on the 2nd. And so the police were on his tail, so they say. And let's see here. Let me get to this story. So the police were on his tail, and his name is Condit, Mark Anthony Condit, C-O-N-D-I-T-T. And he apparently made a 25-minute video confession, as he confessed to building the explosive devices. He didn't explain why he targeted the people. There were over 1,200 calls, 911 calls, of people calling about suspicious packages over the past few weeks. And I think like it was Sunday, there was one at the Goodwill. But the Goodwill explosive was not necessarily or actually tied to the bombing. So they say. And let's see, federal agents went to the bomber's home Wednesday while police interviewed his roommates, attempting to determine whether any other bombs remained. And, of course, the police are stating that he was a troubled man.
Always troubled.
Yeah, he was troubled. Hell, I'm troubled. We all have some trouble. We all have some trouble. I don't go out here bombing up places and walking up into schools killing anybody. So there's this one quote. It's the outcry of a very challenged man, talking about challenges in his life that led him to this point.
Let me bring up the violin.
You had some challenges. in your life. Right. But you know, on the real note, I want to talk more about not him, but more about the young man, in particular the 17-year-old. And also wanted to, and also, you know, condolences to their families and the senior lady that was about 75 years of age, I believe. She was injured. She didn't die, thank goodness. But the other two victims, which led us to speculate that this was related to maybe a terrorist attack, maybe a hate crime, because the first two victims were black and then the Hispanic woman. So the first bomb, which took the life of the young man, House. His name was House. Let me see. Let me get his first name up. Anthony Stefan House. He was a construction worker and a money manager. Now, this House and the other young man, Draylen, their families were connected. Their families they both attended this historic black church, this church that was founded by black people, historic church in Austin. Mm-hmm. Austin has a very small black community. I've been to mm-hmm. Austin several times. It's not a place that I, you know, try to go and frequent, party or anything like that, because I was well aware that black people couldn't go on 6th Street, which is like Bourbon Street or Beale Street in Memphis. Mm-hmm. I was well aware that black people couldn't go on 6th Street and party like the white people did. I'm going to keep it real.
Keep it real.
We're right here in Texas. Oh, I'm going to keep it real. And so the black people can't go on 6th Street and go party and get drunk and walk the streets and all of this stuff like the black like the white people can, because the black people will get their head busted, mm-hmm. many of them. I'm not saying every black person, because there may be some people saying, oh, well, I've been on Austin and I probably, yeah, you probably did. I'm not saying everybody. But there have been incidents whereas black people were doing the same thing that the white inebriated people were doing, and they would jaywalk across the street or whatever, and the next thing you know, police had them all banged up, and even though some of the white people had to say something to the police officers, address their behavior towards black people. They were like, why are you doing that to them?
Mm-hmm.
We're out here doing the same thing. We're all mm-hmm. out here hanging together.
Mm-hmm.
So I was well aware of that. So I've never been a fan of Austin. And again, I'm going to keep it real. To me, Austin is a fake liberal city. Austin is just like places in Oregon. Yeah, they're liberal. They're liberal when it comes to their social issues, things mm-hmm. that they need, but when it comes to race issues, they're not open and liberal like that. Austin is a great place if you are a young white person, or if you're an established politician, because Austin is the capital. But other than that, Austin, I have no love for Austin. I sympathize with the stress that they have been feeling, everybody, what they've been feeling in Austin. But Austin, you got your little ways about yourself, and the black people know that, and that's what they've been expressing on Twitter as well. So with this Anthony Stefan House person, you know, when the explosion happened on March the 2nd, the deputy sheriff tried to say, "Oh well, no, it was it looked like it was suicide because there was a drug raid on that street, and so maybe it was retaliation. He was, you know, setting the bomb up." So I didn't like that, and that speaks to exactly what I'm saying: the racism in Austin. How are you just going to all of a sudden assume that and make that statement to go out to the media? Without mm-hmm. even investigating, you just automatically assume black man. No, he did. No, he created that bomb. We don't even deal with bombs like that.
Sure
now,
don't.
You had those two people in D.C. that were shooting people. They didn't have bombs, though. I don't think.
No.
I don't recall them having any bombs. But anyway, so I didn't like that. I didn't like the fact that that deputy sheriff, and of course he apologized, but there's still, now that this suspect has been killed and all this, there should be a call for him to resign. He needs to resign, this deputy sheriff coming out there and making those statements about this man without even investigating. So I was upset about that. Very, very upset about that. House's daughter was inside the home when the explosion occurred. Yeah, it's Assistant Chief Joseph Cocoon. Cocoon. C-H-A-C-O-N. Is that Cocoon?
C-H-A-C,
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Assistant Chief Joseph Cocoon. He needs to resign. He stated, we can't rule out that Mr. House didn't construct this himself and accidentally detonate it, in which case it would be an accidental death.
Wow.
That's horrible.
Wow.
Horrible. He said, they also pursued the possibility that it was a botched retaliation after a recent drug raid on that street. Give me a break. You need to do your investigation before you start making statements like that. And then 8 days later, the second bomb killed Draylen Mason, 17 years of age. Listen, this boy was just a brilliant young man, brilliant young man. He was accepted to every college that he applied to. And although I read one statement that said that he was going to go to University of Texas in Austin, but one of the neighbors said that he is selected to go to Howard University. So I hope that maybe Howard would give him, his degree. What do they call it? I can never pronounce that word properly. Posthumously. How do you say it? Satellite.
You anyway. Got it. Go on with it.
Everybody know how I am with my pronunciation sometimes. So, Draylen Mason, he was college bound. He had decided to go to Howard, according to one of his neighbors. And again, these two families were connected. People said that he was amazing. He was passionate, very well rounded. He was a role model, and he had a very, very bright future with music. He played the bass cello. And I love the cello. Oh, my. I love string instruments. Well, I love all instruments because I love music. I love the horns, too. But I really, really love strings. I actually listen to some cello music at night, Gregorian cello. And so, again, yeah, just a remarkable young man, and both of them lived on the east side of Austin, where gentrification has displaced historically black and Latino neighborhoods. Yeah, Austin is going through a lot of gentrification. Well, the whole country is going through gentrification. So I'm not going to go through all the different bombings, because I'm sure everybody's been keeping up with it. If you haven't, it's over now, so they say. And you can always catch up on all the other details. You know, there was a tripwire that two other young boys came across, and then these two young men were apparently white, and so that's when people started saying, oh, well, it's not racial, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't even believe that. I believe it was initially like it started out. He was targeting black people. I say that because I know what has happened historically. I know that this country bombed Black Wall Street. I know that this country bombed the MOVE people in Philadelphia. Okay, I know that we go and bomb all over the country, all over the world, still bombing in Syria and everywhere. So I mean,
Birmingham.
How could I forget Birmingham? That's what made me just say, oh, yeah, here we go again with all of this stuff. You had so many bombs going off in Birmingham. Birmingham gained the nickname of Bombingham. There were so many bombs going off.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But, again, my condolences. Yes, I'm kind of ratting on Austin, because that's how I feel about Austin. And if you don't like what I'm saying about Austin, then change it. Stop being fake liberals over there. And all of you that are down with the struggle and down with the cause, then keep standing up. And talk to your friends. Talk to your fake white liberal friends and get them on board and tell them to stop being like that. And that things need to change.
Do.
Mm-hmm. And that's really all I have to say about that, the whole bombing situation. That's pretty much it. I know Sheila Jackson Lee made some comments. She said she wants answers. I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah, leave it at that.
Black Caucus.
I had to take a deep breath when you said her name. And I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, I'm just, you know. Okay, great. Thank you, Sheila Jackson Lee, for asking for answers for that. That's pretty much all I have to say about that. Moving right along to this story that is of great interest to me. In Uniontown, Alabama, there's an environmental racism case brewing. Let me just share with you the case. So the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, now this one thing I do agree with Trump on, I believe Trump did say that agency needs to be dismantled, and I agree with that, because they did nothing to help the people in Flint. They were quite negligent, and some heads did roll with the EPA. Some people did lose their positions, but not enough. This is an agency that is supposed to protect us environmentally, and they do not.
They do not.
They do not. We have radiation in the water here in Texas that they're doing absolutely nothing about. I believe that's why my memory is messing up now. But there's the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has dismissed a civil rights case brought by residents of a small, overwhelmingly African-American town in Alabama. They spent much of the past decade battling a toxic landfill they blame for causing a myriad of physical and mental illnesses. So in the 28-page letter, the EPA said that there was insufficient evidence that authorities in Alabama had breached the Civil Rights Act by allowing an enormous landfill site containing over 4 million tons of coal ash to operate near residents in Uniontown. The residents also filed a separate claim that the landfill operator retaliated against the residents. Mm. This was also turned down.
Mm.
So after the, after the residents filed this case, so the landfill operator, I guess he must have been going to them, harassing them, probably telling them, y'all better shut it down, don't file no cases against me, we this and we that, harassing them.
Threatening them too, I'm sure.
And so many advocates have said that this is one of the most egregious examples of environmental racism in the U.S., where a largely poor and black population has had a polluting facility forced upon it with little redress. Now, remember, we briefly mentioned this before, in North Carolina, this black community, they're having the pig feces waste sprayed on them. Okay, so, I mean, see, this is what I keep talking about.
And they couldn't even come outside.
They can't even come outside. And so Ben Eaton said that he's lived in Uniontown for 33 years, and he said that he blames his regular headaches and burning eyes on the landfill, which he says has an odor that can be smelled for miles away.
Mm.
They can't even hardly go outside. They said that they have not received any protection from the government, and they feel that it is because they are black and poor. If this was a white, wealthy community, this would never have happened, and he's exactly right about that. If it was a white, poor community, maybe so, but not wealthy. And see, that's why we have these two issues. Poor, like Dr. King said, poor people's campaign. So, poor people, and this has always been the decisive factor. If the ruling class can keep the poor whites, I think it was LBJ that said, Lyndon Baines Johnson that said, if you can make a poor white man feel that he's better than somebody, better than a black man, he'll help you pick his pocket. Well, he won't even notice his pocket being picked.
Mm.
I'll get that quote up on. I'll get that quote.
Mm.
I should know it. I hear it all the time. But and that is the case. When the ruling class makes the poor whites, just like on the plantation, when the poor whites were in charge of being the cracker, the whip person, slave driver, then they felt that they were superior. But they're
right.
Just as poor, dusty, and broken and bombed down as a slave darn there. You just
yeah.
get maybe a little more pieces of bread and a couple more pieces of meat.
Exactly.
That's all.
Yeah.
They were just as poor, but they were made to feel superior
mm-hmm.
because of their skin color. The huge Arrowhead landfill rubs up against Uniontown, where about 90% of the population is black. Half of the town lives below the poverty line.
Mm.
Let's see. The site used to contain a jumble of car parts, like electronics and other discarded items, until a flood hit a coal plant 330 miles away in Kingston, Tennessee, in 2008. And then over the next 2 years, the cleanup of Kingston involved shifting 4 million tons of potentially hazardous coal ash by train to the Arrowhead landfill, abutting Uniontown. Coal ash contains toxins such as mercury and arsenic that can affect the nervous system and reproductive system and cause other health-related problems. So, see, they probably had been having miscarriages, birth defects,
right.
all kinds of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just all types of nervous system problems. Let's see. And people living within a mile of this coal ash storage pond have a 1 in 50 risk of developing cancer. And so we wonder why people have all these strange cancers now.
Right.
A lot of this comes from environmental injustice. And we have a lot of that right here in Texas. When you go into places like Texas City, which is right up the road from Galveston Island where we are, you have all those plants.
Mm-hmm.
When you go up near Bay City, if people remember during Harvey, that's where it was Exxon and all those other plants that had to shut down and release all of those toxins, all those poisonous gases out. It's going to be a lot of people coming up with all types of illnesses over the next 10 years because of the gases that they had to release.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are people dealing with the mold, they're going to have to deal with the after effects of that environmental injustice situation. And we are really trying to get Dr. Robert Bullard, who's the founder of Environmental Injustice, we're really working on getting him to come on the show. I'm going to have to go and stalk his office up there at TSU to catch up with him. But in 2013, several dozen Uniontown residents filed the complaint under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. EPA officials visited the town and spoke to residents as the Obama administration sought to overhaul a federal system that has rarely invoked anti-discrimination laws to remedy environmental injustices. However, the residents' hopes have now been squashed by the EPA. Please shut that darn agency down because they're not doing anything.
Not a damn thing.
Not a damn thing. Damn. So, research that Uniontown, Alabama. The residents had a lawyer at Yale Law School who represented the residents, and she said that an appeal against the EPA was possible, but unlikely.
Well, hard to fight. Hard to fight.
So, I would like to reach out to some of those residents and see if they could come on the show to talk about that, because that's a very serious issue, environmental injustice. Environmental racism.
It has long reaching effects.
Absolutely.
Long reaching. Like you say, 10 years from now?
So let me get my opioid factoid. I think that's what I'll call these, Featherlight. My opioid factoid.
Okay.
Opioid factoid. So we are in the midst of this opioid epidemic, crisis, health crisis. And Trump recently stated that he wants to arrest the drug dealers and have them serve the death penalty, stiffer, more severe charges applied to them. And I mean, you know, hey, that's all fine and well. I mean, if you want to do that, I'm not advocating for anybody to have to go to jail or anything like that. But I mean, if you're going to lock people up, you need to lock up some of these doctors too, because there were, I think, 5 doctors that were just recently found this week. They were receiving bribes to prescribe this spray fentanyl, and fentanyl is more deadlier than any of the other opioids or heroin. And the thing about it is, a lot of these people that are taking the heroin, they seek out the fentanyl because the fentanyl is stronger, it's more potent. Mm. And they actually seek out the fentanyl. Even though they know it may kill them, they still want that. And in fact, what many of the addicts practice is, once they find out that somebody has some fentanyl that caused them to OD, they want to go to that particular drug dealer and get that particular pack. They want that because they say, oh, wow, oh, it made him OD. Shoot, I want some of that.
Mm.
They do. I've heard them say it. I've heard them say it. That's what they want. Mm. So I was watching this one video because just like they're addicted, and Featherlight can attest to this, just like they're addicted to the opioids, I'm addicted to reading and researching about them being addicted to the opioids and the heroin and all of that and the fentanyl. So I was watching this one video, and a first responder was talking about how they went to this one person's house, and that was their third time going to his house that day. He OD'd 3 times that day.
Think of all that money.
Yeah, they put a strain on the economy. That is an strain on the economy. It's a strain on the first responders, because what they're saying is they applied to fight fires or save people that were in danger, not constantly run up to your house and give you some Narcan because you OD.
Intentionally.
Like it's a game. Yes. You're just sitting up there just OD'ing. And then they just, you know, walk. You okay, buddy? You okay? Okay, buddy, we're going to take you to the hospital. Do you want to get some help? Do you want to get clean? I never saw them do that with crack addicts. They locked them up, took them right on the jail, slammed them on the car. We saw all of that on the news during the 80s. Did we not, Featherlight?
We certainly did.
We saw all of that on the news in the 80s.
It was a scum of the earth.
I got so sick and tired of watching that crap on the news, I didn't know what to do. That's all they did was lock our people up after they dumped those drugs in our communities. Nobody's forcing these people to take any heroin. Now, yeah, there may be some that started taking the pain pills because they hurt their knee playing lacrosse and all of this stuff. I get that. But when your prescription ran out, and see, that's why they need to look at some of these doctors, because they knew that they were getting these people addicted to oxycodone. And when your prescription ran out, then you went to street drugs. Mm-hmm. But then y'all want to, Jeff Sessions want to lock people up that want to smoke a little marijuana and all of this and that.
10, 20 years.
Back. Yes. And so,
nobody ever overdosed on marijuana.
No, man, please.
Nobody ever ran over anybody else on marijuana. In fact, they like to sit their tails down and enjoy themselves.
A little something and rest. Mm-hmm. No, the first responders don't have to come to your house three times a day to revive you because you smoke too much. That don't happen. Does not occur. So my little opioid factoid is I was watching one of my videos that I love to watch. And so,
keep us informed.
Oh, yes, I will. So because I really want to share this one because, you know, people always talk about black people and crime and the people in Chicago, they're shooting up each other and, you know, y'all need to do something about the black-on-black crime. Well, do something about this white-on-white crime like this occurrence that I'm about to speak on now. So this 12-year-old little girl was talking to one of the senators, and he was just asking about her life, and, you know, like, you know, how things, you know, what's going on. And so she said, I think he asked about her parents, and she said, well, my dad died. Oh no, I believe she was speaking about her, how her dad used to beat her and her mom. And she said that her dad died. And so the senator said, well, what happened? What happened to your dad? And she said, well, my dad, he was on drugs really bad, and he used to beat me and my mom, and my mom didn't want to get on the drugs, and so my dad was arguing with her, and then he took a needle and he shot her up with some heroin, and she OD'd and died, and then he shot her two more times in the arm to make sure that she died, and then he shot himself up and he OD'd in front of this 12-year-old child. Oh, in front of a 12-year-old. Now, I know that was a very disturbing story, but I have to share that because I'm sick and tired of people talking about black-on-black crime when you have all these people in places like West Virginia, and New Jersey, and New Hampshire that are committing all kinds of crimes. All kinds of crimes. And this was just a murder.
Right.
And see, you'd never sit here and talk about this, but you want to talk about who got shot up in Chicago.
Right.
And then just like this little Condit boy, Mark Anthony Condit, who they say was bombing up Austin and all that. Oh, he had challenges and blah, 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 blah. Well, remember Laquan McDaniel in Chicago when the police officers shot him up in the middle of the street 16 times and it was on video? Mm-hmm. Laquan McDaniel had been he had been moved around from foster home to foster home. Mm-hmm. Abused in different kinds of ways, physically abused, sexually abused, all kinds of things. So if anybody was disturbed, it was that little boy.
Definitely.
But they still shot him up in the middle of the street 16 times. So I don't, like I said, I don't want to hear anybody talk about Chicago. And like I said before, when anybody does bring up anything about Chicago, let your response be, well, if you had not have allowed, if this government and the Chicago PD had not went and assassinated Chairman Fred Hampton, maybe we wouldn't have all of these killings and shootings going on in Chicago because he had organized that city. And they were working, not him alone, but they were working, the Panthers were working to improve and uplift that community. So I don't want to hear anybody talk about all of these shootings in Chicago. What you need to talk about is all of these
call
people
recording off.
They're stealing and killing and doing all kinds of things in West Virginia, New Jersey, New Hampshire, Maine, Ohio. Okay, we can just go on and on and on. So anyway, that's my opioid factoid for tonight, Featherlight.
Thank you so much. Now, here in Galveston, several months ago, while conducting an unrelated narcotic investigation into a 32-year-old Salvador Riviera, it's here on the island, Galveston Police Department Narcotics Union detectives received information that a Galveston police officer, later identified as John Ruthers, may have been working with Riviera and playing an integral part in the illegal distribution of prescription drugs. And this is a police officer. So they have been working
on hell in the pan.
The police department, Galveston Police Department, has been working closely with the FBI, DEA, and Galveston County District Attorney's Office to bring this individual to justice, because he has been working with this drug ring. This is a police officer who's been working with the drug ring to get these prescription drugs out to the public. And this is just one. This is just one police officer. Mm-hmm. So this is big. This is really, really big. Mm-hmm. Now, Rutherford, the police officer, has been placed on administrative leave, and they're doing some other investigation. But they've got him. They don't just want to admit it totally, but they've got him. Anytime the FBI and all of those folks get involved, they have something to go on. So... That's here. That's my little tidbit.
One thing I'm very, very pleased to see is that people are able to now see, due to social media, that we weren't lying all these years when we said that the police officers, some of them are crooked, some of them actually do their jobs and try to help people in the community. But there are some that are crooked. They plant guns, they plant drugs, they steal drugs, they sell drugs. You know, they're operating like a gang.
Exactly.
Like, you know, hey, Tupac used to say that. Shoot. So that was, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about some phenomenal women. You want to talk about some phenomenal
Please,
women?
Yes, we do that. Yes.
Switch over to
we have so many.
Yes. All right. So one person that we want to highlight tonight is Serena Williams. I love Serena Williams. I remember when they first came out, her and Venus playing tennis, and they had those little white beads like we used to wear when we were little girls.
Right.
The white beads on their braids, and the other tennis players would say, oh, they need to take those beads out their hair. It's distracting. Because they were serving that ball with so much force and power. Shoot, they were like, oh, it's the bees. It's got to be the bees. It can't be them playing that good. It's got to be those little African bees. If they just take the breed, okay. So they took the bees out and put some other little weave in their hair. They still beat your ass. Okay? So anyway.
Don't forget, they would complain about the sound.
Oh, yeah, the grunt.
Yeah.
The grunt. Yeah, they
and now they're doing
grunt.
It. Now they're doing it.
Okay, Miss Serena, new mother, American professional tennis player. She has won 23 Grand Slam singles titles and several Olympic gold medals. She was born Serena Jamaica Williams, September 26, 1981. She is ranked as 22nd best player in the world by the Women's Tennis Association. She began intensive training at the age of 3. She won her first major championship in 1999, and completed the career Grand Slam in 2003. Along with her individual success, Serena has teamed with her sister Venus Williams to win a series of doubles titles. I remember when they first played. Over the course of her career, Serena Williams has won a record 23 Grand Slam singles titles. Her most recent victory came with the 2017 Australian Open, when she surpassed Steffi Graf's record for most wins in the Open era. Let's see. Now, they were groomed, and I really need to read that book. On them. I think their father wrote a book. But I have watched their documentary, which is
very documentary. Very interesting.
They were groomed for a tennis career from the age of 3 by their father. They have a signature style and play. They changed the look of their sport. Their sheer power and athleticism overwhelmed opponents, and their sense of style and presence made them standout celebrities on the court. They captured in 2008 a second women's doubles Olympic gold medal at the Beijing Games. The next year, Serena and Venus purchased shares of the Miami Dolphins to become the first African-American women to own part of an NFL team. In 2012 Summer Olympics, at the 2012 Summer Olympics, Serena claimed her fourth overall Olympic gold medal by teaming with her sister Venus to defeat Czech Republic stars Andrea Havlaka and Lucy Hedrecka in women's doubles. Seeking to add to her hard work collection, in the summer of 2015, Williams had to overcome big sister Venus to advance past the fourth round at Wimbledon. She always credits Venus.
She should.
She always says that she couldn't be Serena. There would be no Serena without Venus, because Venus pushed her. Venus was so great. And so when they practiced and played against each other, she always had to try to hold her own with her older sister.
Right.
And that's what made her so great. Now, Williams scored a historic victory at the 2017 Australian Open. And let's see, that was, she defeated her sister Venus 6-4 was her 23rd win. She surpassed past Graf's total and captured the world number one ranking. Let's see. Now, their father, Richard Williams, he gleaned from tennis books and videos to instruct Serena and Venus on how to play the game. At the age of three, that's when they moved to Compton, California, and they would withstand rigorous hours of daily practice with the from her father. And somebody was telling me that he would pay. They said that this was in the book. He would pay, like, the drug dealers and people around there to come and just, like, heckle them, because he wanted them to be tough, because he knew that they would heckle them at Wimbledon and when they went around the country. So he wanted them to be prepared.
I didn't know that.
Yes, because that made them stronger. So, yeah,
it
he didn't want them to play on the fancy courts starting out. He wanted them to play on the rough courts with holes and all of this so that they could be stronger. And I think in that documentary, I think she would have to lift tires. I think he had her lifting tires. Something like that, to make her stronger, to strengthen her arms. And, let's see, he wanted them to be around, like, the gang activity. He wanted them to expose them of the ugly possibilities of life, and to also to show them, if they did not work hard and get an education, this is what life would have for them. The courts were riddled with potholes and sometimes missing nets, so this is how they cut their teeth on the game, in on the game of tennis.
Good foundation.
Made them tough. Let's take a quick break and we'll return with our discussion on phenomenal women. You are tuned in to the Mind, Body, and Spirit radio show, and we will be right back.
Thank you. Black Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
All right, and we're back here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. We're talking about phenomenal women, and we're starting out tonight with Serena Williams. And we'll just go ahead on and conclude Serena so that we can go into Venus. But let me just mention this. Essence Magazine called Serena one of the country's 50 most inspiring African Americans. She also made television appearances and lent her voice to shows such as The Simpsons.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either about The Simpsons. I think I remember hearing about that, but I forgot. So I was glad to see that. Seeking to provide educational opportunities for underprivileged youth around the world, the tennis star formed the Serena Williams Foundation and built schools in Africa. She released an autobiography entitled Queen of the Court in 2010. And that is the lovely new mother, Serena Williams, who we just mentioned a few weeks ago how she went through that scary birth with her child when the nurses were undermining her and wouldn't listen to her when she was trying to tell them that she was experiencing some health challenges. And she had to tell them, hey, look, I need a this, I need a that, I need a drip, I need a blah, blah, blah. She said, listen to Dr. Serena, I said. I love her. Yeah. All right.
Well,
that concludes Serena.
Let's talk about Venus, her sister. Venus, American professional tennis player, has an estimated net worth of $75 million. She is the only woman listed on Forbes 100 highest paid athletes in 2017, born Venus Ebony Starr Williams on June 17, 1980, in Linwood, California. She's one of five daughters. Venus was introduced, as we said before, to tennis by her father on the public courts in Los Angeles, not far from the family's home in Compton. Richard Williams was a former sharecropper from Louisiana. And as we said before, he gleaned his information from reading tennis books and watching videos to instruct his girls on the different aspects of the game. Williams, 37, continues to be a top player despite in her 30s, which is ancient. It's considered ancient in tennis terms. She designs her own clothing line, 11, and sells it through the Glit Group. Other endorsement partners include Wilson, Electronic Arts, Kraft, Ralph Lauren, and Tide. Williams owns a small interest in the Miami Dolphins with sister Serena. Venus Williams has been ranked number one in the world three times and is the first African-American to be ranked number one in the era of open tennis. She was the second highest earning female athlete behind her sister Serena and has won two gold medals in the Olympics. At the 2000 Sydney Olympics, Williams became only the second player to win Olympic gold medals in both singles and doubles at the same Olympic Games after Helen Wills Moody in 1924. Wow. At the 2017 Wimbledon Championships, Williams extended her record as the all-time leader, male or female, in Grand Slams played, with 75. With her run to the 2017 Wimbledon singles final, she broke the record for longest time between first and most recent Grand Slam singles final appearances. Williams has won four Olympic gold medals, one in singles and three in women's doubles, along with a silver medal in mixed doubles, pulling even with Kathleen McCain Godfrey for the most Olympic medals won by a male or female tennis player. She is the only tennis player to have won a medal at four Olympic Games, with 49 singles titles. Williams trails only Serena among active players on the WTA Tour. March 11, 2018 marked the 29th time that Venus Williams has played her sister, Serena Williams. Their professional rivalry has now lasted more than 20 years. It's been 20 years. They have won a combined 30 Grand Slam singles. That's a tongue twister. Grand Slam singles titles between them. Venus has now earned more than $40 million in career prize money. The two sisters have played each other more than anyone else. She is generally regarded as one of the all-time greats of women's tennis, and along with younger sister Serena Williams, is credited with ushering in a new era of power and athleticism on the women's professional tennis tour. Bravo. Williams sister.
Yes, all right then.
Breaking all kinds of records.
That's right. So I'll quickly share Miriam E. Benjamin. Let me see here. Miriam E. Benjamin was a school teacher in Washington, D.C. And she is the person that founded the push bell button.
Push bell button.
So whenever we utilize, say, a service button for like a button call, think of her, because she's the one that invented that type of machinery. I'm trying to pull up this piece on her that I had, so forgive me. I'm just calling this out by memory on her. So she actually invented this button, and it was used when hotels were in need of like a service person to come to their rooms. So
okay.
She designed this button so that all they had to do was just press the little button, and they were able to service more people in that way. So, therefore, she, elevated the service industry. And so just think of all the different ways that we use a button, like if you have an intercom system, that system comes from her invention.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Miriam
E. Benjamin.
Yep, Miriam E. Benjamin. I can't find. I'm going through my little book where I had her information. So forgive me. Let me see. Here we are right here. So this invention, it reduced the expenses of hotels by decreasing the number of waiters in attendance to add to the convenience and comfort of the guests, and to obviate the necessity of hand clapping or calling aloud to obtain service. Customers would simply touch a button, which instantly gave a signal on the back or front of the chair to the call waiter. Consequently, a waiter would be able to serve more guests.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So
that's time and money.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so this button was on a chair. Mm-hmm. And so, like, before this, of course, as mentioned, people would have to call out or clap their hands and all that crazy stuff. So she created this button. Isn't that awesome?
That is awesome. Very awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Creative minds.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me see. Now, let me see. Do you have a quote, Featherlight, before we go into our next topic?
Let's see. Ooh, I love this one. The worst part about being strong is that no one ever asks if you're okay. No one ever asks if you're okay because you're strong, especially when it comes to the strong black woman. I mean, we've got a lot of strong women out there. Don't get me wrong, but if you had a woman who had to be at the helm of being strong, it's the black woman. Because we have had to be strong for so many years. When I was on the fake book, like 6-7 months ago, I was reading something about something that happened. It was something, I don't know, bad or whatever. And it was against black women. And so the woman was saying something about it, you know, saying that it was wrong and what have you. And another reader, and it was a male, I don't know how old he was, but, you know, just kind of listening to his words, he sounded kind of young. I hope an older man wouldn't think this way. But he said, "Oh, what are you whining about? I thought you was a strong black woman." And I was insulted. I was insulted. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so we're not supposed to hurt?
Yeah.
You know, we're not supposed to need a shoulder? You
right.
know? You know, we're wearing this badge of strength, but it's piercing our hearts. You know, so we do bleed. Okay, so I really like that quote. It's the first part about being strong. Nobody asks us, "You okay?" Because you're strong.
You're strong. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I say about that strong black woman thing. I could let men know. Listen. I am a Southern Belle, and I am a damsel in distress, okay? So don't think that I'm just a strong woman that's getting ready to try to be the man in the family and hold everything up and all of that, put all the weight on my shoulders. No, I've lived that life a little bit, and I don't want to do it. I am a woman, and I have a right to feel like I need some help, and I'm not ashamed to say I need some help.
Mm-hmm.
They say we're supposed to be a helpmate,
right,
and help each other, be partners
right.
in this. So, yeah, I need some help. I'm like the old people. I need some hope.
Some hope.
I need some hope, doggone it. I need some hope. Shoot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that quote. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. All right. Let me see. Do you want to go into the next topic?
Yes. So we're going to talk about some signs that you're being manipulated by a narcissist or a sociopath. And sometimes when we think about a sociopath, we think of these crazy people out going around bombing things and, you know, doing horrible things like that. But they can be everyday people that you interact with every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it is good to know some signs if you are in a relationship, be it romantic or otherwise, so that you will know how to deal with these people. Mm-hmm. So one of the signs is gaslighting. We've kind of talked about this before, and it's interesting that gaslighting has been around for years, and the term comes from an old movie about this man who was trying to drive his wife crazy so that he can collect all of her money, get her institutionalized. And so he would go around and mess with the gaslighting, turn the lights off and on, and she was like, "Is something wrong? No, everything's fine." You know, and she started to question her sanity. So that's where the term comes from. Gaslighting, the person questions you about everything. You start to question your own sanity. They sow seeds of doubt in your mind. Okay.
Mm.
They you know that this happened, but then they'll say, no, you're wrong. And then you're like, really? I could have sworn. Okay, you know. And this goes on and on until a point where you start to wonder, am I going crazy? You know, is it me? So the solution, remind yourself, no one can make you feel unpleasant without your permission. Mm-hmm. You have to give your consent for someone to make you feel uncomfortable. You have to have confidence in yourself, okay? You have to give them the permission to do this to you. Realize that you are okay. It's their problem, not yours. And they will try to make you feel that it's you, that it's your problem. Realize that when you start to question your sanity and you're in a relationship with someone, you work with that person, their coworker, your manager, your lover, your husband, your wife. Check that.
Yeah.
Gaslighting.
Yeah. I've been in situations like that with people gaslight, have me questioning stuff like, wait a minute, hold up, Michael, wait a minute now. And they try to make you feel like you're the crazy person.
Yes.
Yes, parents.
On a bigger scale, when we say relationship, it could be a relationship with the whole society. As people of color, we're in a relationship with another entity. Say, for instance, like the bombings, and we say, it sounds like it's, you know, racial to me, sounds like it's targeting black. No, that's not what's happening. The guy probably ticked off the bomb himself because he was upset about the drug raid, and that's gaslighting. No, that's gaslighting.
Yeah, that's
a form of gaslighting too, and we are gaslit a lot as people of color.
We sure are.
A lot. So we need to be aware of that.
Yeah, we got to be aware of that, totally aware of that.
Now
recognize when the game is being played on you. That's gaslighting. It's a game being played on you.
Right.
And control freaks, number two. Now, you know, we're talking about being in a narcissistic relationship or a relationship with a sociopath. Mm-hmm. So you have your control freaks. They must control the situation and people. They will be mean to you if you don't do what they want you to do.
Ooh.
They can be highly possessive.
Mm-hmm.
They try to control every single action. And the solution here is that just remember, you are not the prisoner. Think of the Stockholm syndrome. People will hold you hostage, and you end up loving them. So what you have to do is just free yourself. Remember, you are a free being. And so don't let anyone control you. Don't let them control your happiness. Don't let them control your anger or your frustration. You be in control. Be your own control freak of your own life, if anything. But don't let anyone else come in and force you to be subjected to their control freak nature, because people will try to do that.
They sure will.
They try to control you. Yeah, you're going crazy.
Yep.
All right. So control. Have you ever been in a relationship with a control freak?
Yes. And the thing about these types of people is they don't come at you this way. They come at you as charming, as pleasant, as, no, they're so nice. They like me, and they admire me. They're into what I am into, and they get you hooked. You know, they get you hooked into them, and so it's like you said before, they get you to care about them, to care for them, and so it's difficult for you to see what you need to see. And I have been in relationships like that, and I think, I told you I was going to, you know, be late. Why are you upset with me because I was late? Well, I mean, you said 10 o'clock, and it's almost 10:30. Well, it's only like 30 minutes. And, you know, you start trying to justify yourself, you know, because they're... The next time you'll say, oh, I told them 10 o'clock and it's almost 10. I got to hurry, you know. So that's controlling. That's controlling.
All right. Control freaks. All right. Okay, well, number four of our...
Three.
Oh, we're on three. Okay.
Make you feel guilty.
Yeah. So they'll make you feel guilty for speaking your truth and your heart and your mind, for saying no. But the solution to this is remember that you hold supreme power. Time to start externalizing your power. They have none over you, so stop focusing on them. And you don't need their approval. Mm-hmm. And remember from the Four Agreements book, be mm-hmm. impeccable with your words. So don't let anyone make you feel guilty for speaking your truth,
right.
speaking your mind, saying
right.
what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
people, they will try to do that. They'll try to make you feel guilty for your feelings.
Yes.
Those are your feelings, right or wrong, those are your feelings.
And that's your truth.
That's your truth.
It may be different mm-hmm. from theirs, but it doesn't mean that you're wrong.
That's right.
No?
Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. All right.
All right, number four, they're always moving the goalpost. They're mm. never happy for your achievements. I remember I was with someone and I got this promotion or raise or something. I was so happy. I couldn't wait to tell them. And they were like, well, so what? Like, my little balloon went, you know. It's like, wow, I thought you would be happy for me. Well, I mean, mm. you're not supervisor. Well, no, but I'm on my way. You know, be happy for me. You know, so the solution is that surround yourself with positive energy. You know,
mm.
don't, if you're around someone that's constantly pulling you down and not up with you, you can choose your own environment. Don't choose negative people, because they will bring you down to their vibrational level.
Oh.
Sometimes you can be up on this level and they will be down below, and the next thing you know, you're sinking down with them. You know, you say, well, I really didn't get what I should have gotten, and maybe it's not such a good thing after all. And then you start feeling bad, you know, about your own accomplishments, because that person in your life, it could be your friend, it could be your best friend,
oh.
what you think is your best friend, and they will bring you down. So exclude those type of people from your life. Even if you've known those people for a long time and you thought they were okay, when they exhibit these kinds of signs, it's time for you to turn the other way and just walk in the other direction.
There you go.
Call them, you know, just keep your distance from them.
Good distance. Mm-hmm. All right, so you never know your position with them. They're always changing, and they will use you to get what they want. They're always changing how they behave and changing up the game and have you all discombobulated and
mm-hmm.
carrying on. So the solution here is these people are not coming from a place of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
They're not Darcy. Lifting you. Right. You have to have someone that is going to enhance your life.
Right.
That's what I feel. Have
mm-hmm.
someone that will enhance your life. If I'm not enhancing you in any kind of way or helping you, and you're not helping me advance, then what are we in a relationship for? Why are we friends? I learned that from my younger cousin, and I used to think that it was so insensitive when she would say that. And she would say, I don't have friends that can't do anything for me, that can't help me in any kind of way, and I'm not going to be somebody's friend that I can't help. And it took me a while to really digest that and understand it, but I grew to understand it. Like, and it's true. How are we helping each other? How am I benefiting from this relationship with you?
Mm-hmm.
How? The friends that I have, my close circle of friends, they help me in so many ways. I call them my life coaches. My
right.
friends are my life coaches.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because they help me. If I can't come to you and speak to you about when I'm feeling good or feeling bad, what in the world was that? Feeling good or feeling bad, then what's the purpose? What's the purpose in us being friends? So, anyway, you need to surround yourself with people who will lift you up and not constantly put you down. If someone is always making you feel bad about yourself, you need to leave them alone. Mm-hmm. Leave them right alone.
Mm-hmm. Take responsibility for yourself. Accept yourself 100%.
100%.
Girl, try your own thumb.
Okay, and so number six.
Everything is always your fault. They put their flaws on you. They are never wrong. Never wrong. I know some people like that. I mean, you will know for sure that they are wrong about something. I mean, it's just like plain as day. The sun is shining. No, it's not. It's cloudy up. No, the sun, look, the sun is shining. No, it's not. It's cloudy, you know. If something happens, it's wrong, and you know where it came from, they will always make it your fault. Always your fault.
Always
their
fault.
They didn't show up for something that they know that they should have been there for, and then they will say, well, the reason why I didn't show up is because you did such and such and such, and then it threw me off, and then I had to do such and such and such, and then you start thinking, oh, okay, I didn't, okay, well, all right, I'm sorry, and you end up apologizing, but you know it was them, and they never take responsibility when they did something wrong. This is a narcissist because they do not feel like they are wrong in anything that they do. And this is an easy one to spot. If you're in a relationship with someone like this, whether it be your manager, your coworker, your friend, your lover, your husband, wife, if they are never wrong, that's narcissistic or sociopathic behavior. Don't play their game. Don't feed into it. Don't act the same way that they do. Don't bring yourself down to that level. You may be tempted to, but think of yourself as being here. I'm doing my hands up here, and then they're down there. Don't play their game. Don't feed into it. Walk away. Just walk away. If you don't know where you stand with someone, it's time to stop standing and start walking. Okay? Walk away.
Walk away. You better walk away from
walk
love.
Away. Run.
Run. Yeah. Run away.
And right one now, last thing I wanted to say about a narcissist. Once they have you hooked, once they have you into them, and you realize, you say, wait a minute, this person isn't who I thought they were, and I think I want to get out of this relationship. Now, this is in a relationship, like a romantic relationship, okay? And you want to get out of it. If you're in a relationship with a narcissistic person, they will not want to let you go. They will do everything, and they will say anything to get you to change your mind. And sometimes it can become violent. That's why it is so important to know, to be aware of the signs, because there have been many, many instances where a person has ended up hurt, or and they will use your children, they will use anything that you love against you. They will use anything to keep you from getting away. So it is so important to notice these signs early.
Early.
Yes.
Early. All right. Well, thank you. So that concludes our discussion on being in relationships with narcissists and sociopaths. So stay away from them, and remember the solutions. If you need to go back and listen, remember you can always log on to Black Talk Radio Network, and you can go back and hear this show and all of the other shows that air on Black Talk Radio Network. And remember to donate so that we can keep bringing you the radio shows here on Black Talk Radio Network. Donate to the Black Talk Media Project, and also remember to join BTR, the Social Media Experience, created by Scotty Reed. We will be right back after this break, and we'll come right back with our African spirit. And if we can squeeze a letter in, and we also have a Did You Know and some Love the Body, another life. We'll be right back.
Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Back here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show with our African Spirit segment, and tonight we are honoring Queen Mother Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, since her birthday was this week, March 18th. Well, it was March 18th, and she was born Frances Luella Cress in 1935 in Chicago, Illinois. She died January 2nd, 2016, at the age of 80. In D.C. She was a physician, a psychiatrist, child psychiatrist. Frances Cress Welsing was an African-American Afrocentrist, and her essay, her 1970 essay, The Cress Theory of Color Confrontation and Racism, White Supremacy, offered her interpretation on the origins of what she described as white supremacy culture. She was the author, as we mentioned earlier, of the ISIS papers, The Keys to Colors, 1991, book that just changed my life, opened my eyes. It really confirmed what I felt as a child. Mm-hmm. She articulated it, because mm-hmm. I wondered about so many things, you know, like why were all the black people in the projects, and where were the poor white people? Where did mm-hmm. the poor white people live? And if there are poor white people, why don't we see them?
Right.
Where do they live? And rather, if there aren't any poor white people, why is that the case? Why aren't there any poor white people? Why do I only see black people in the project?
Right.
And I was an adult before I realized that that's one thing that white people do. They take care of each other. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the poor white people, they would have them in different sections. You would have your one or two little white families that may live near blacks and things like that. We've always had that, but they were pretty much kept in a different area. Mm-hmm. What I saw in Memphis growing up, we didn't see a lot of white people living in projects.
Nope. I didn't see any.
Yeah. I don't recall. I didn't grow up in the projects, but I grew up around projects. I always tell people, I'm not ashamed to admit it, I'm one generation from the projects, because my family, a lot of my family members grew up in the projects. My uncles, my mother. So, let's see. Okay, so... Welsing caused controversy after she said that homosexuality among African Americans was employed by white males to decrease the black population. She described white people as the genetically defective descendants of albino mutants. She wrote that due to this defective mutation, they may have been forcibly expelled from Africa, among other possibilities. Racism, in the views of Welsing, is a conspiracy to ensure white genetic survival. And she attributed AIDS and addiction to crack cocaine and other substances as chemical and biological warfare by whites. Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, she appeared in the documentary 500 Years Later, and she also appeared in Hidden Colors, The Untold History of People with of Aboriginal, Moor, and African Descent, a 2011 documentary by Tariq Nasheed. And that is Dr. Francis Chris Wilson. Thank you so much, Queen Mother. Thank you so much.
Yes, for opening up our eyes. Mm-hmm. And for breaking it down. I, like you, felt like, something's not right. I can't put my finger on it. And to speak on it, you know, people would look at you like, what? So you couldn't at that time before, you know, she brought all this out, you couldn't really just kind of say what you really felt. But I'm so glad that she broke it down. I really am.
Yeah, or just kind of say what you were kind of thinking and was unsure about. I didn't really know how to articulate it and just summarize it the way that she did. And when she explained how the games like basketball, golf, all of that was related to dunking a ball into a hole and the black hole mm-hmm. being the black woman. And mm-hmm. when she talked mm-hmm. about the gun, the shape of the gun. And she explained in the ISIS paper why police officers would always say, well, I thought he had a gun. I thought he had a gun. I feared for my life. And she explained, yeah, they fear for their life. Yeah, they thought you had a gun. Even though you don't have a gun, your gun is your penis, the male phallic system. That was the fear that many of the police officers felt. They've been taught that way. Many of them have been taught that way. That's how they were reared and raised.
Yep.
And so that's something that needs to break within that culture, people that practice white supremacy, even those that don't know that they practice white supremacy. I remember, and we'll move on, I remember I was working at a hair salon, and there was this little white racist lady there, and I recall her, I walked by the lounge area, and I recall her saying to some of the other black stylists there, she said, oh, I thought all black people eat bread. Baby, you know I must have pulled her to the side on that one. And mm-hmm. at that time, because this had to have been maybe 15 years ago. And so
more
I pulled
that.
Her to the side. It was more than 15 years ago. Yeah, probably more than 15, 20 years ago, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled her to the side, and I told her that was a stereotypical racist comment for her to say, that I thought that all black people like bread. And she was like, well, I didn't mean it like that. And then I said, you know what, you may not understand it, but that's why I'm bringing it to your attention. And mm-hmm. so I think that a lot of people, and even myself, I may have behaviors that I don't know that are harmful. And I always tell my friends, you have to check me on that. That's what friends are for. Make me better. Make me understand where I'm going wrong so that I won't keep doing the same thing.
Right.
So I think we have a responsibility to check people on things like that. In particular now when we're speaking of check people on their white supremacy. Your white friends, when they make comments, I mean, I remember a white lady told me one time, and this was before I became just really more outspoken and conscious, she told me, you're pretty to be a black girl. And I tell you, at that time, I didn't know how to respond. And mm-hmm. And my other friend was a white lady from the UK. My white friend from the UK had to tell me that shit was wrong. And who mm-hmm. the hell does she think she is to say something like that to you, that you're pretty to be a black girl? Oh, she mm-hmm. was, baby, she was ready to throw chairs at that lady.
Mm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we have a responsibility to check people on their behavior. All right.
Certainly do.
Yeah, that's all I have to say about that. Let me see. I think that we have a caller that may want to share something, Featherline.
Oh, okay. Please take it.
Let's see. All right. Caller, welcome into the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. You are live.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, how are you?
Oh, wonderful. This
namaste.
Is Mother Hattie. I've been listening. Namaste.
Mm-hmm. Oh, namaste,
so
Mother Hattie.
Dorothy connected me up. Yes.
Great.
This has been such a great night of events. Mm-hmm. And of course, Dr. Francis Cress Wilson is one of my favorites, and the ISIS Papers is my favorite book.
Mm-hmm.
I always get excited when someone mentions that, and
yeah,
you know, all the information that you gave about the two sisters with the tennis, and you know, it makes you have to think about, let me go back and make sure my boys who know who these sisters are, and and all of
yeah,
that good stuff. So
yeah,
yes, it's just been very, very, very wonderful to listen
absolutely
to the show tonight, and so thank you. And I really wanted to say, when you talked about that boy, that he's a troubled boy that's going around doing all those things, I mean, mm-hmm, this thing has the fingerprints on it of the whole key of a hate crime. Anybody that says anything different, and I mean, it's the same MO, you know. It was just like the boy that did the Oklahoma bombing, and they came out first talking about this was some Middle Eastern something, something, something. That's what the, I think it was some official that said that it was like maybe the, I don't know if it was the governor or some politician in Oklahoma that said that with Timothy McVeigh, and the same with this deal here in Austin. I mean, it's real clear what that is. He didn't go into his neighborhood and do that. He did that somewhere else.
Yeah.
And this is so far out, but I'm going to tell you this, and I got to say it, and I might be wrong, but I actually even think this is some of the, what do you call it, kamikaze behavior of what's going on in Washington, D.C. now, because you know that man that's up there now who's the president, I don't think they really like them Bushes too much, and this whole bunch of stuff been happening in Texas, you know?
Well, you know, the thing about Texas, we have the sanctuary cities here. Like Houston is a quote-unquote sanctuary city. And so, yeah, people are feeling some kind of way about Texas at this time.
Yes, I really think so. And you can kill two birds with one stone. So, yes, might be a Bush-Trump war going on there.
Yeah, that Trump, he has a whole lot going on. So you also went to the UN this past week, Mother Hattie, and we're having our reparations call. Would you like to share anything briefly about the UN visit or the reparations call?
Well, sure, absolutely. One of the things that we did at the United Nations, as always, you know, this is in the decade of the African woman, and certainly all kinds of things have been going on around the world, but we have to stand up and speak for ourselves. What happens is we're allowing other people to speak for us rather than we speak for ourselves. And so I was happy to hear that next year, when we have, you know, this is the commission on the status of women, okay, period. That's that convention. So everybody's included. However, the commission on the status of women at the United Nations level, you know who shows up there, okay? The other women, not the black women, black American women. However, a huge contingency of African women from the continent's always there. And so that's who we're talking to. There was just, you know, it's always amazing. It's always, you learn a lot. And last year when I went, which was actually my first time, but it's just so wonderful to hear Mother Dr. Blakely talk about all of her experiences. Queen Mother Dr. Blakely out of New York, she's a nun, and she's a wise, wise woman. And we've got to take care of each other, like you were talking about, other people take care of each other. Until we do that, it's just going to be pretty difficult for us. But at the United Nations, the thing that's coming up in 2020, there is going to be a massive conference, a world conference on African women. It will be in an African country. So everybody start saving your money up now. And I am hoping that we can do what we said we were going to do, is to really take a larger contingency of Black American women to the United Nations of next year. And it does happen. And I've seen more and more each year, more and more of us. So just with the group that we were in with the Million Women March and Dr. Fillet, even that group of people is widening each year, and it's good to see that. But bottom line is, it's the middle of March each year at the United Nations. And so I hope we can really plan to be there next year. This is 2018, so 2019 is going to be some really big planning on where that convention is going to be for African women in 2020, which African country will be hosting us. So there are some names that have been tossed around, but let's get prepared for the 2019 United Nations Commission on the Status of Women, and then let's get prepared for that 2020 convention that's going to be in one of the African countries. And so that's going to be very, very interesting. And these women are offering us, when they come, they have different officials that are very high level. This lady that I met, and her name, I'll have to, you know, the name's always pretty difficult to enunciate. However, she is the first lady of Nigeria, Edo. And I think with what she said, and then last year what some of the women said that were in, from some of the other countries, they're offering us land there to come there, help with the land, and to do some of the things that need to be done to help build Africa. And so they're really hunger and giving opportunity and roadway for us to do that, to do some businesses there. There's another Nigerian lady, and I think her tour to another city in Nigeria should be coming up soon. I'll get the information again and distribute that. But I didn't meet her through the United Nations, but through a lady in Charlotte that had Vivian does a lot of work in collaborating with other people in other countries and even locally. So Vivian Stewart is a dynamite personality, and I'm just thinking we really should get ready for some big, big movements. In terms of our reparations for Black women, another opportunity with the Me Too piece, it's important, certainly, that we get on and speak for ourselves. When they talk about Me Too, I figure we better talk about African women straight from Africa on those ships that were brought out of there up until now, and what we need to be doing around that. And so the reparations call is every Tuesday, reparations for Black women, and that number is 515-739-6215, and the code, PIN code, is 767-408. And that's just one of the things that we've been doing to just talk about and generate some ideas around what we could do. And we do have some, we have a Twitter account and hashtags that we're tweeting out. And Ashira, if you could give those to people in a few minutes, that would be great. And what we talked about yesterday on Tuesday was getting some of those people that and organizations that have really been doing some really great work together on reparations to come on our show and just to talk about reparations, what it means. And we talked about in previous conversations reparations and restitution, and we learned of people. Sheriff gave us a whole list of people that already had gotten reparations and that sort of thing. We looked at Chicago has some legislation now, and then we're going to see where that has gone, updating, see if that study has been completed. It was a study they passed to have done to have so that you can see what the impacts were of what we've all gone through since the slave ships showed up on the shores of Africa and brought people here. So when we look at that, what does that mean? So there was legislation and a study being done, which was maybe we have to do it state by state. That was perhaps that strategy. So Illinois has that taken care of. So it's just been a really wonderful opportunity since January when we started talking about reparations for black women. And we do have a different little perspective. However, we're not saying that the brothers don't deserve it. We're saying we want to speak for ourselves as black women, and surely everybody needs it, brothers, women, and we want the brothers to call in because we want to see what their perspective is as we continue on with this discussion. So there was just so much, and we've accomplished some great learning, I think, in a lot of ways from the reparations for black women conversation that we have every Tuesday, and it starts at 9 Central Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And again, the number is 515-739-6215, and the PIN code is 767-408. And we just really want the men to call in so that we can really hear what you're saying. And this is an opportunity for us to do that. However, we want reparations for black women, and the opportunity was when you come out with Me Too, okay, let's talk about the black woman.
There you go. So let me give out the, thank you, Mother Hattie, for sharing that. Let me just give out the Twitter handle for people to follow Women United so that you can keep up with what we are doing, and the hashtag is at Women United BLK. That's at Women United BLK. All right. So thank you, Mother Hattie. Thank you. And we'll give out some more of those hashtags. One of the hashtags is reparations. Get information for reparations. Reparations and restitution. So follow us at Women United Black. Okay, Feather Light, you have some Love the Body for us? And a Did You Know? I think your headset is muted.
Oh. Actually, I just want to kind of briefly touch on the root chakra, because we did say we were going to discuss the root chakra this week. But there's so much to it that I will just kind of hit some places here and there, and then next week we'll devote a little bit more time to this, because it is the main, it's the first chakra, and the other chakras rest on it. So when it's off, it just throws you off altogether. So I did want to give a little bit more time to it, which we will next week, but let me just touch on a little bit about it so that you have some kind of idea. The root chakra, which is located at the bottom of the spine, and as I said before, it's the first one. It deals with issues of the physical body and survival. It includes aspects of life that involve self-preservation, including your work, your home, your family, money, food, other relationships that involve security, your confidence in, or your fear of your ability or inability to survive, are governed by the health of your root chakra. And we have to survive on this planet. Safety and survival instincts, such as your fight or flight responses, including your ability to sense danger, recognize truth, your gut level recognition, stems from here, from the root. And the root chakra, if it is off, if your root chakra is off, it affects the flow of energy to your other chakras, and it makes it impossible to achieve balance in your remaining chakras.
And it is the most important chakra to have unblocked, to be able to live your life fully. It's associated with your right to have. Each chakra has a right. And so this chakra is associated with your right to have and your right to be here. A strong root is essential to stability in your life. It's located at the base of your spine. Its function is survival. It's about grounding, being grounded. Our upper chakras may be too open, you know, like, oh, I know this, I'm woke, I know this. But without grounding, we appear, we're unstable. We lose our center. We fly off the handle, we get swept off our feet, daydream in a fantasy world. We lose ability to contain and to have and to hold. It's our right to have. It's our right to be here. And when we lose our ground, our attention wanders from the present moment, and we may appear not to be all here. In this state, we feel powerless, like a vicious circle. We may no longer want to be here. And so one of the elements or factors causing a collective imbalance, a closed root chakra, is a type of a holocaust to a group of people, such as genocide, which African people are going through. The African people and descendants of Africa certainly fit into that type of mode. We're under constant ethnic cleansing by several means, including environmental poisoning, like we just mentioned, nutricide, the school to pipeline project, and many other things. So the root chakra is greatly off balance as a collective for African people. And our right to have, to be here, is constantly being threatened. And that is throwing off our root chakra. The color for the root chakra is red, and its scent, each chakra has a scent, is a smell. Its function, if it's malfunctioning, you have weight problems, constipation, sciatica, degenerative arthritis, knee troubles, all kinds of physical problems, because it deals with your physical body. And we will talk more about balancing the root chakra. Signs of a root chakra, a balanced root chakra, is you're satisfied with life. You have an overall sense of well-being. You feel safe and secure in the world. You have prosperity. You're able to let go with ease. You have job and career satisfaction. You got good health. You're physically fit and strong. All of this is a balanced root chakra. You have abundant energy, and you feel grounded and centered. If you're reckless and careless, have careless behaviors and careless attitudes about life, inability to recognize danger, resistant to change, unable to manifest material abundance or prosperity, you have bone and skeletal disorders, all of these are signs of an imbalanced root chakra. And we will talk a little bit more next week about how we can balance our chakras, our root chakra, and what is actually making the root chakra become so imbalanced. If your root chakra, if you're not grounded, a lot of people will focus on the third eye. Oh, my third eye is opening. My third eye is opening. I'm in touch with my higher self. But are you grounded? Are you just floating around out there? Work on that root chakra first. Threats to survival, they stimulate our adrenal glands for that burst of energy that we need for fight or flight, which should be rare, not constant. You shouldn't always be in a fight or flight mode. And so that's what we will talk about.
I just want to, before you close out on that, I just want to say, because this is something that, you know, some people may feel like, oh, what the heck they talking about, chakra, root chakra, and all this. But this is really a part of African health. Mm-hmm. And it's the energy centers in our body. And a lot of times, a lot of our ailments, as you've mentioned and we've discussed previously, they come from our chakras just being off balance.
Right.
And when you mention that fight or flight, as Black people, we're constantly in this stage of fight or flight. We're constantly having to be fearful.
Yes.
I've mentioned this before, like me driving around, I have to always watch myself here in Texas. Have to always, you know, watch myself, and when I'm getting out of the car going into a store, I have to, you know, make sure, okay, this person over here is not some crazy person that's, you know, pissed off today and want to kill a black person. I mean, I'm just being real. This is what we have to deal with
on
a
daily basis.
Go through all the different stories of how different black people have been attacked by some random person that just want to walk up to them and kill them. So we're always feeling like this, and so it throws our root chakra off, and that's the base, and it just discombobulates us when that root chakra is off balance. So it's important for us to, you know, understand what the root chakra is, how it gets off balance, and how do we get back to that state of balance
and grounding.
And grounding.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Grounding.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, as you said before, all of our life experiences, they are affected by our energy system, and our energy system affects our life. So, it's crucial that we understand how our body works and what we need to do to get back on track. All right, so let's do like a minute of breathing. Everybody just relax. Take a deep breath. Exhale. Remember to breathe in through your nose. Let it go down your throat, past your chest. If you have to, put your hand on your chest, and then put your hand on your lower abdomen so that when you breathe in, your stomach rises. And when you breathe out, your stomach goes down. And so your hand should be moving down that's on your stomach, and your hand that's on your chest should remain still. So that's deep breathing, that's belly breathing. Try that anytime you're stressed out, you're about to have some kind of interaction with someone that's off or whatever. Do that so you can calm yourself. Breathing really calms you down. Let's do our closing. Take a deep breath. Inhale. Arms out to the side, over your head. Your palms meet. Look up. Bring down that energy. Good heavenly chi over your face, your shoulders, your chest, your abdomen, your hips, your thighs, and push it down to the earth. Inhale again, arms up over your head, palms face. Exhale, bring your hands down slowly. The slower you move, the better you're able to feel your energy. If your fingers are tingling, you know that you're doing it properly. And one last time, inhale, arms up over your head, and this time bring your hands down into the Anjali position, whereas your hands are formed into the prayer symbol. Smile, it always helps. It sends a message to your brain to relax, and nod slightly. Namaste.
Can we go through that breathing one more time? Because that is so relaxing, and I want to make sure that everybody can remember how to do that. You said put what hand over your stomach again?
Okay. All right. Put one hand. This is a belly breathing.
Okay.
One hand over your chest.
Oh, ideally. I didn't do that.
You didn't? Oh, okay.
I missed that part. One hand over your chest.
One hand over your chest. And ideally, the women, put your left hand over your stomach, your lower abdomen, ideally, and your right hand on your chest, men reverse. So when you breathe in, your chest remains still, and the air goes to your stomach, and your hand that's on your stomach should be moving up. Exhale, slightly push your stomach in with your hand so that you will exhale all of the toxins. When you exhale, toxins are being released. So inhale
4. Exhale, 6. Inhale again, 4. Exhale, 6. That's belly breathing. Got it that time?
Yes.
Good. And please practice this as much as you like at home. It really calms you. Not only that, it brings your blood pressure down. Breathing it properly brings your blood pressure down. And it also helps you connect with your higher self.
Ah, connect with your higher self.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Brother Light. Namaste to you. Thank you for
Thank
sharing.
Thank you. That
Thank
was
you,
wonderful.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mother Hattie, for sharing that. And thank you, Scotty. And we will be back next week. Remember, people, you can join us on our call next Tuesday, 9 p.m.
Wednesday.
Reparations Tuesday, and you are Wednesday.
Bye.
And good night.
Namaste.
Peace.